Now, if I said to you, list off a couple of communist countries for me, you'd probably tick off the USSR, maybe China, and then probably Cuba. And when you think of Cuba, you probably think of Fidel Castro and his brother Raul, who have ruled over the communist island since 1959. Until last year, that is, when Raul retired and a non-Castro took over as president, Miguel Díaz-Canel. Now things are changing. A new constitution to be voted on by the State Assembly next week looks to legally recognise private property and the free market in some regards, but will still retain preferential treatment for state power and the Communist Party. Is it the end of the Cuban communist experiment? Well, joining us on the line now to discuss is Associate Professor of Latin American Studies at UTS's International Studies Program, Jeffrey Browett. Jeffrey, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Good morning.
So I believe Cuba, I guess in some respects, has been slowly and slyly expanding its private sector over the last decade or so, but will this radically advance that process or just, I guess, recognise it formally?
To recognise it formally, but then one would need to ask what exactly is the private sector in Cuba and how deep is it? The new constitution, which is the first since 1976, the one drafted in 76 during the Cold War, still has to be approved in a referendum before it can become official. But since all power is in the one-party state, what the party wants, the party gets. My understanding is the constitution will be presented to the public in meetings across the country, and then there'll be a national referendum. So yes, on one level, they're formally recognising what already exists, but in technical terms in the constitution, you are not allowed to own private property, even though there is some limited amount of private businesses approved.
So what would this mean for the average Cuban citizen? Does this mean that they're potentially going to be able to own their own house, farm, business, etc.?
Technically, yes. In theory, we'll just have to wait and see the final wording of the constitution. And then one thing is a legal document. The other thing is how it's actually put into practice. Certainly, the new constitution is supposed to allow for the ownership of private property and allow for more private businesses. When Raul Castro took over in 2008 from Fidel, he experimented with economic reform and allowed more self-employment and small businesses. And supposedly that accounts for, I don't know, about 13% of the national economy and employs 500,000 Cubans. So in a supposed communist country with a population of 11 million people, that's not insubstantial. A percentage of those run small and medium-sized businesses. But they've been in a sort of legal limbo since 76 because the Constitution only recognised state property and the agricultural cooperative, right? So this is kind of recognising what already exists, but also making it more flexible and supposedly encouraging more people to open private businesses. When I was there in 2000 in Havana, there were restaurants called Paladares, which are small privately owned restaurants, which are they're only allowed so many customers, and the restaurant owner had to pay a quota to the government. And they had to pay a quota to the government regardless of whether they had customers or not. And I remember when I went to them, there was always someone from the government or the party standing on a street corner watching and counting how many people went in and out. And the same, they have bed and breakfasts where, you know, sort of like Airbnbs where people rent out private rooms and stuff. They've had them since I was there in 2000. And once again, you have to legally apply to do this. And if you do, you have to pay a monthly quota or a tax to the government, whether you've got any people staying with you or not. And so some people have to relinquish their licenses because they don't get anyone to stay and they've still got to pay to the government. So it's a very awkward private business sector arrangement.
So it doesn't sound like this is sort of a huge sweeping measure. It almost sounds like it's been a little bit of a long time coming.
It is a long time coming, and like I say, one thing is the rhetoric and another thing is the actual practice. The upper echelons of the Cuban Communist Party have always had this kind of a pathological hatred of anything that smacked of privatisation because they associate it with a savage capitalism and the country ending up in just another exploitative capitalist country, according to their theory. But a lot of Cubans have been suffering for a long time from food shortages and lack of freedoms and lack of movement, especially overseas and stuff like that. So the argument doesn't really wash very well.
And so for any South American country at the moment, I think a lot of the questions surrounding anything that happens is how is it going to affect any potential relationship with the Trump administration, such an overarching sort of figure up north there? Do we know if there's going to be any sort of, I don't know if backlash is the right word, or support from the Trump administration?
There'll be muted support. Well, there's two things. There's U.S. administration under Obama and previous leaders, and they've all had their own policies. And then there's Trump, and we all know what Trump's like, right? He's on one level, he's kind of like a fruitcake. He's a strange character, and he's hard to predict because he lashes out, he jumps around, goes back on what he says. But there are official policies in place, and United States has an embargo on importing Cuban products into the country. Yet, ironically, the United States exports about $300 million worth of goods to Cuba each year. They've exported something like, I don't know, $160 million worth of goods already this year. So it's not completely closed, as people say. But Trump, here's the thing. The bedrock with the U.S. administrations has been, the position of the government is, we will never normalize relationships with you until you have free, open, democratic elections. And that is unfortunately not negotiable in Cuba.
It is definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right. All the best. Let's watch this space. And in spite of my cynicism, who knows, maybe things will change.
We'll chat to you again when there's an update.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Associate Professor Jeffrey Broad on the new Cuban Constitution. It seeks to legally recognise private property and a market economy in what was once a steadfastly communist place. It's going to be, as I said, interesting to see how this one unfolds.